Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today my guest is Dr. Andrew Gibson. Dr. Gibson has just published his new book, Got an Angry Kid? Parenting Spike, a Seriously Difficult Child, which is out now on Loving Healing Press. Dr. Gibson received his BA and MA from San Diego State University and his PhD in education from the University of Connecticut in 1987. He has taught at Portland State University, the University of Maine, and the State University of New York, and has been in private practice for 20 years. About 25 years ago, Dr. Gibson took his own personal childhood experience and his experience as a parent and developed the methodology for dealing with extreme, difficult, and angry children known as PACT. PACT, which stands for Parenting Angry Children and Teens, was adopted in 1993 by the Connecticut State Department of Children and Families. And since then, 500 families have completed the year-long program with remarkable results. Got an Angry Kid is the first in a series highlighting different kinds of emotionally disturbed children, such as adolescents, foster children, adopted children, young adults, Hispanic, and African American kids. And you can find out much more about Dr. Gibson and his work through his website, dragibson.com, and that's dragibson.com. So that said, I'd like to welcome you to the program, Dr. Gibson.
Thank you.
Well, great. So I'd really like to first off get some clarity on what is considered a seriously difficult and angry child and how this is really different from your typical childhood adolescent rebellion type of thing.
The child you can't handle. It may or may not have a psychiatric label. The label really doesn't matter to me. But it's a kid you no longer can handle. And that's all it is. It's just somebody that you tried everything for, and you cannot create any change. This kid's still out of control. He does what he wants, when he wants, how he wants, and you're just a cipher in his life at this point. At least that's what he thinks, and it's probably very likely what you think, too. It turns out you're entirely wrong, but you've been beaten so much by this kid, you assume that there's nothing much left to work with.
Mm.
My job is to convince you, and I typically can, that you've got a world of option out there.
Mm-hmm.
Just means picking yourself up and getting pointed in the right direction.
So what are some of the typical things that parents try before they end up at your door?
Therapy, in-home services, out-of-home services, after-school programs, short-term psychiatric programs, that sort of thing. The general array of services out there that are available to families who have serious problems with kids.
So clearly you think then that there needs to be a real overhaul of the current psychiatric system when it comes to dealing with kids like this.
Well, I'm not sure I'd go on that limb. My experience tells me, and it's a very skewed experience, my experience tells me that people will not come to this program unless they've done everything else first. Because this program throws the entire burden of creating the change in your kid on your shoulders. You may not want it. It may feel like guilt. I don't get anywhere near guilt. That's not my interest whatsoever. But you may feel it. You may feel quite inadequate that you have to admit, maybe it's me somehow. And it's not necessarily you. I don't necessarily mean that you created it, but if you're living with this kid, you probably are perpetuating it just by the way you react to him. And that comes as quite the revelation. So the normal psychiatric stuff is still in place, and people have to go through that typically.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a law on my part. This program can be used very effectively with parents who have very little problem with their kid. But people tend to wait till the house is on fire.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to. The book is out there in hope that parents can get to it, get to the program, before things are so outrageous. But typically what has happened is people wait till things are awful.
Oh, really?
Before they take on this burden.
Yeah.
Because it's a big burden. It takes a year to get through the program. There are 28 steps. You don't get to go to step number two until you do step number one really well.
Mm.
And on to three until you do step one and two really well. And why would you want to do that? An awful lot of people by the end of this process, I don't mean my process, I mean through all the services, tend to give up because this kid can be just outrageous. So I work with those few who have not given up.
And so how open do you feel parents are to really accepting their part in this whole situation?
It takes a long time.
Yeah.
They have to experience a lot of failure first, which is too bad because they also waste a lot of time when they're doing it. Perhaps with the privacy of the book, they can get to that point faster. That is, if you don't have to admit to somebody, gee, maybe I'm not doing this right, then maybe it'll be easier, and that's one of the things I'm hoping.
Mm-hmm. Well, what is it that causes this kind of anger and rage in a child? It's hard to believe.
Oh, it's all over the place, number
yeah.
one.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that you may think it's hard to believe is most of it's hidden. Because if you had a kid like this, you wouldn't go up and down the street saying, I've got a kid like this, because it's embarrassing, makes you feel badly about yourself as a parent. But what causes it? All kinds of things cause it. If I had to boil it down to one thing, I would say it's both parents not being on the same page. I mean, you might think I'd say divorce, and divorce is a big deal in a kid's life, but it's really not the divorce. It's the fact that parents are not on the same page. You can do it badly, and if both of you agree, you'll probably have a better outcome than if both of you disagree.
Hmm.
Sounds backwards, but I think it's true.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Well, how did you develop PACT? How did this come out of your private practice? And tell us a little bit about that.
It came out of having one of these kids of my own and having to go through the same process that everybody else has to go
through.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a lot of sympathy for people's struggle. And I created it because I tried to have the kid removed by the state. And I was told by the state that they could do it if I really wanted it. It happened to be a close friend of mine who was that administrator in the state.
Mm-hmm.
But that I should think of something. That was remarkably unhelpful because, of course, I've been trying to think of something for years.
Mm-hmm.
But I did think of something. Now, it didn't come as a flash overnight. It came in bits and pieces, and I happened to be a school psychologist at the time, so I was able to try out things and have access to parents. This puppy was working.
Well, tell us a little bit about the whole process, how you take parents from step to step through this 28.
Okay, first of all, there's an application process,
mm-hmm.
and it's not difficult. There are two scales that you've got to fill out and show me. One scale shows me how nearly resembling you are to every other client who's gone through the program, and that's important. And the next scale is to what extent do you take responsibility for what's going on in the household. Can you say, yeah, I get upset and I start swearing, or yeah, my tone of voice sounds pretty rotten sometimes. If you start doing that, then we've got a match. All right, so you are enrolled in the program, probably by the state of Connecticut, and then I come to you, and I briefly explain the program. It takes about 15 minutes, and I give you the first assignment, and I go away. The first assignment is no yelling. I don't care what the kid does to you.
Mm.
You may not yell. You may not raise your voice. In fact, this is the hard part, you cannot now be heard from room to room.
Oh.
And this is not merely yelling in anger or speaking in anger, but it's doing it in convenience. You can't holler up the stairway, there's time for dinner. Now you have to go upstairs.
Okay.
Now this is all self-discipline because this forces you to think about how loud you sound. And you've got to sound calm because you're going to, first of all, prove to yourself you can be calm in spite of anything. We don't care what the kid does to you. You got to be calm about
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all you have to do the first week or two or three or four or five or however long it takes you to get there.
That could take a while.
Well, it takes most people 3 or 4 weeks
mm-hmm.
to cut it out because they come in enraged. And so we've got to get rid of the rage part, not through therapy, because this is not therapy, this is training.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, and I try very hard to have people be in therapy at the same time, and they typically are, but they are.
Mm-hmm.
So they just have to work at that and work it and work it. It's all self-report. I ask them, okay, how many times did you yell this week? And they tell me, and if their report is good, we go on. Parents, by the way, don't lie. Everybody thinks they're going to. They don't, because the stakes are so high. So they do well in the first one, and say, okay, now we're going to do the second one. But that doesn't mean the first one's gone away. That means you got two to work on,
gotcha.
And then three, and then four.
And so everything builds.
It does, and you only get four errors, not merely for the first goal, but for the first and second, and for the first and the second and the third. So even up to 28 goals, you only get four errors maximum. So you get very good at self-discipline, self-control.
Mm-hmm.
You basically create a defense around yourself.
Mm-hmm.
A very effective fence that you can't puncture anymore
mm-hmm.
because he's been very good at manipulating you into anger.
Absolutely.
That is now gone. That doesn't happen anymore.
So what's happening in the mindset of the child is suddenly the parents' reactions are changing?
Well, every parent thinks the kid's going to go nuts. Look, I'm taking down this fence, and I'm saying, you've got no fence. But yeah, you are creating change, and this kid is going to be quite curious. They're quite concerned that the kid is going to explode, that the illusion of control is completely gone, and he's going to go nuts. Well, he doesn't. I've had one case in those 500 you mentioned go nuts. But even he came down.
Mm.
Mostly, the kids are very curious. They may ask their parents, and the instruction to the parents is you do not tell them what you're doing. So anything that pops to mind, you tell them except what we're doing.
Oh, so the children are completely oblivious to this.
Absolutely, because they are so manipulative. If they know your goal is, say, no yelling, they'll make certain you do. After all, this is a control issue, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah.
Kids have taken it away. They want to keep it. They don't want you taking it back.
How is it that a child can be so brilliantly manipulative?
All I can say is the brighter kids are, the more manipulative they are.
Mm-hmm.
Because the brighter any of us are, the better we do at anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so these kids have gotten themselves into a very negative frame of mind and will manipulate as much as possible. They will give it up. They don't particularly want to be there. It's an uncomfortable kind of control, but it's better than no control at all.
Well, what is the typical mindset of one of these children? Are they just angry all the time? Is there any space for any kind of real joy?
Not much, and it's probably a perverse joy if it does happen.
Mm.
They hang around with the dregs. They hang around with kids you would not want your kid to hang around with. Well, they don't want them hanging around with your kid either. But everybody needs somebody, and so they find the bottom feeders and hang with them. I wouldn't say there's much joy in these kids' lives.
Mm-hmm.
There can be, and there will be, if parents will do this. The changes are just remarkable sometimes. It's one of those situations where I start a new client and say, this is really going to happen to you if you do this well. The chances of it not happening to you is about 20%, so the odds are overwhelmingly on your side. So let's just get busy and do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great motivation.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell them I've been there, too. So I can say I feel the things you felt, and there's probably nothing new you can tell me.
Yes. So now, how did the book come out of all of this? This is somewhat of a workbook, a take-home type of a book. But
it's a two-part book. The first part is largely given over to Spike. The second part is the program. And, yes, you do follow along if you want to do the program. And it came out because years ago, 25 years ago or 20 years ago, I can't remember exactly what it was, I was asked to create a book, if you will, loosely speaking, for the State Department of Children and Families so they could have something on their shelf that they could refer to. So it really came out of that. This is a much cleaned-up version of that thing.
Okay, and it's very accessible to a wide audience, so people don't necessarily have to be going through your program to have this book be unbelievably insightful.
Not at all, although my guess is that people need it. They're certainly going to try their first few goals to see how they fit.
Mm-hmm.
It's written very much for parents. It's not written for clinicians, although clinicians like it, so they pass it on to their clients.
Oh, there's an incredible amount of information, and I think that It just, for a parent with a child like this, just reading through it and being able to relate so clearly to the words is so powerful.
Yeah, I'm hoping that's true, and I believe that's true based on the kind of information I'm getting back, because it is intended to speak directly to them with the least amount of BS possible.
Yes, clearly.
And they like that.
Mm.
I mean, I've dealt with this population enough to know how to talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so... Mm-hmm. That's how we talk in sessions.
Now, typically I would imagine in families like this there is a big communication problem just with the parents themselves just because of the intensity of this kind of dysfunction.
I say forget trying to communicate. You're not going to be able to do it for a while. Think about that once the program gets over. You'll probably be able to do it.
Really?
But for time being, you can't do it. So no, you can only do those things that work in terms of the program, and we'll discuss everything. And if it doesn't work, you're not allowed to do it, because all it does is make you look weak. And you can't afford to look weak, because we're trying to build up you as a respectful object in this kid's mind.
Mm-hmm.
And we can do it, but we don't do it by showing that you're weak.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm.
He is the master of communication, not you, and he'll take anything you've got and wrap it around your neck. And you've had that experience a lot, so we're not going to do that anymore.
Right, right.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Hi there. Are you looking for new ways to promote your book? Why not consider being interviewed live? With the huge impact internet radio as well as podcasting is making in our society, your voice can now be heard worldwide. Let Juanita at Inside Scoop Live create the necessary steps for you. You will not only receive a web page of your own, but your interview will be available for MP3 download and RSS feed. As well, your interview will be posted on venues such as iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Podcast Alley, and the Inside Scoop Live blog. Go to InsideScoopLive.com today for more information. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I'm talking today with Dr. Andrew Gibson. He is the author of Got an Angry Kid? Parenting Spike, a Seriously Difficult Child, which is out now on Loving Healing Press. And you can find out more about Dr. Gibson and his book through his website, dragibson.com. So what are your thoughts on diagnoses such as ADD and bipolar that are so rampant these days?
I'm very pragmatic. I'll take anything that comes to the door, and I don't care what the title is, because it's really not title-specific. You can be ADHD, bipolar, intermittent explosive, post-traumatic, Asperger's. It really doesn't matter because there's an overlay of behaviors that's common to all of these that kids display, particularly to their parents.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a state client that comes to me, you have to have a label. So
you have to.
If you're a private client, then you don't. I don't care. But they all have the same behaviors.
And it's all based in anger.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. With a lot of resentment. These kids feel terribly put upon that the conditions of their life are not their fault. They've been let down, and they're going to let the world know it, primarily their parents.
So this seems to be something that there's a progression with these children. So if there is a progression, you would think that there would be the potential, you know, there would be some predictability to this. So maybe these kids could be reached before it got to this point.
Well, I think the most undersung therapeutic, if you will, intervention out there is the parent. They've never been accessed well. I think parenting is the new wave, and parenting done well is remarkably effective. But one of the things you got to do is convince parents they can be better parents sooner. They can be more effective parents sooner than later.
So what are some of the things that you would suggest parents do right up front?
Well, the program. I mean, just settle down and do the program. Even though you got a relatively minor problem, you can still go through the program, examine yourself, vis-a-vis your situation, and say, nah, that's not my problem. That's good. But maybe the next one is.
So catch it early, even by doing. I mean, this is a really very revealing program that you've put together.
Yeah. I've had a number of clients who simply use it as a check mark against themselves.
Yes.
And have done very, very well, although they're always surprised that there are still tweaks out there that they need to work on, and they do. Even the parent of the well-adjusted kid isn't perfect. None of us are. We're not required to be. But if you start getting a little bit of problem, you may still think, well, I'm doing all right.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably are doing all right, but I bet you can do better.
So how often do these kids go towards physical violence? Towards the parents?
Very common. Maybe 50% of them have assaulted their parents.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is it time to call the police at that point?
Unfortunately, I tell people, don't bother calling the police. They're just going to come to your door and harangue you for being a lousy parent. And if you want to hear that, go ahead and do it, but they're not going to arrest your kid. Now, if you lay a glove on the kid, they'll arrest you, but it's not going to work the other way around. And it should, because it's assault in both directions, but it's probably not going to. So what you do is you call a mobile emergency psych if it's that bad, and then have a kid taken to a psychiatric facility, and they'll probably be there from, I don't know, 3 to 7 days, and then discharge back to you.
What does that usually do to a kid when they come back home? Is there added resentment?
Of course there is.
Yes.
Sure there is. Who likes to be treated, shall we say, specially? Nobody does, especially a kid. It's frightening. It's confusing. It creates a lot of guilt in them. It's not a good idea. If you have to do it, you have to do it, but it's not a good idea. Sending kids to a residential facility for a year and a half is a very popular thing to do. It's also terribly expensive. But all you learn is to hang around kids who are just like you and pick up some really nasty habits. Keeping kids at home is really the thing to do.
So this really is a parenting issue.
Yeah, it is. It's not. But again, it's not because the parents created it. I don't know if they did or not. I don't make any attempt to find out.
Mm-hmm.
I do know if you live with this kid, you will enable it. So what we're going to do is we're going to take out those 28 enablers that you do keep irritating your kid. Because when your kid is irritated, he does dumb things. Things that are not good for him and things that are not good to the family.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to stop doing those. But he won't do them because you tell him directly, don't do those anymore. He's going to screw you. But if you set up an entirely different model, he will drop them because he basically doesn't want to do them.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody believes that until they get into it because they think the kid's incorrigible or nearly so. But it's simply not true.
So how far along in the process, in the year-long process, do you really start seeing some major changes with these kids?
Well, you see initial changes after about 8 weeks.
Okay.
And that's enough to keep you going. It's enough to make you believe I'm not making all this up.
Right.
So I say, give me 8 weeks, do what I tell you to do, and you'll begin to see change. You won't see huge change, but you'll see change, and it'll be convincing. So.
And do you see higher rates of children in a specific gender or a...
Not anymore. No.
Really?
It used to be the case that you'd see higher rates in boys.
In boys, mm-hmm.
But it's pretty even now.
Isn't that interesting? So do you ever address any of the social issues, the extended environment, peer issues?
Yeah, that's therapy.
Yeah.
I don't do that.
You don't do that?
I don't need to do it. And it is for therapy. I think both things should happen at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And they very commonly do, but no, that's not my issue.
Mm-hmm.
I strictly focus on the program.
On the program,
because
yeah.
Because if you make it a black and white thing, we do this, then we do this, then we do this, that makes it very easy for parents to carry it around in their heads.
And I imagine that's, after being so beaten down for so long,
right,
they
you
need
want,
that.
You want a road sign.
Yep.
It's very clear. It says stop. That's easy to remember, stop. So that's what we do.
So what about different socioeconomic populations? Do you see this happening?
Across the spectrum. Most of my clients are middle to upper middle class, but it's not because they're not out of working class as well. I've had plenty out of there. I think that the reason I get more middle to upper middle class is the higher up you are on the socioeconomic scale, the more you know what your resources are. People down at the lower end don't know resources.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you go about finding? I also think the mental health network as a whole is prejudiced against them.
Lower income?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But upper income, you can't be prejudiced against them because they'll sue you.
Yeah.
Well, that's a bit of an overstatement. But the point is, they're harder to push around. It's easier to push around people who are innocent, just don't know anything and don't know resources, don't know how to access this or that. But it's harder to push around somebody who's upper middle class.
Sure, yeah. Absolutely.
It's one of the advantages of being upper middle class. You know things.
Mm-hmm. So tell me then what your clear and basic goals are for Teaching Pact and for this book.
To make the concept of this more widely known, A. B, to get people who have difficult kids to do this sooner rather than later. Why wait for the house to be on fire? It's not necessary. You're wasting a lot of time. And the more mud this kid has on his boots, the longer it's going to take him to get rid of it. Yeah, we can make a lot of change in a year, but that doesn't mean he's cured. He's going to have to take care of his own head problems himself in time, as we all have to. But I would rather have a family bring a kid, if you will, who's 10 years old than 17.
Mm.
I can make a lot of progress with a 17-year-old. I don't mind a bit, but I do know if it's a 10-year-old, we'll get him back in school. If it's a 17-year-old, we won't.
Yeah.
Now, the 17-year-old will take care of his education, but he's going to get a GED, which is fine, but he will not get back into school.
Mm-mm. So what have been your long-term results with these kids and really leading, upstanding
lives? I rarely hear about failures. Once parents learn this, they learn it. And everybody slips from time to time. They admit it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're all human. But they don't slip much, and they know the consequences of slipping once they slipped. I said, ugh, there I go. I'm not going to do that again.
So do you have any success stories about kids that are now adults that really, are on a total different path because of PACT?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I still hang on to a number of parents. This is harder. I've been doing this for 20 years. A lot of people have moved away.
Sure.
But I still hang on to a bunch of them, and who are still in the state. And they generally will accompany me to talk, for instance, and talk about what it was like then, what it's like now.
So you've been doing this for so long. Are you still enjoying it as much as when you first started 20 years ago?
Yeah, because it is so predictably successful.
Mm-hmm.
I think if I were doing therapy, I might not feel that way. I don't know. I'm not a therapist, so I can't say. Because you go into a therapeutic session, or a situation, and it's a long-term slog.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't really know you've achieved what it is you want to achieve. It's all pretty much intellectual. And it takes a year and a half or two or three, all of which can be time very well spent. I recommend people do it. But this, I see results very quickly, and so do parents. So it's very rewarding. So I doubt if we'll ever give it up.
Mm-hmm. Well, you clearly know your way around this issue. I mean, this book that you've put out is really, it is so full of information. It really is brilliant work. Now, is this also, can your program be done, and will this book be helpful to a single parent?
Yeah, single parents, of course, have a much harder time in life because they are a single parent doing things that two parents should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
But absolutely. In fact, you can even do the program successfully if you have a spouse in the household who doesn't cooperate. So all you've got, so what you've got now is not just two kids, but three kids.
Yeah.
And so you practice on the non-cooperative spouse in exactly the same way you practice on the kids.
Mm.
And you can bring the spouse around, too.
Mm-hmm.
You have to give up the expectation that spouse is going to be a support because he or she's not going to be.
And you're on your own, and maybe they'll come around.
Well, they will come around. They won't ever come to sessions, but they will stop yelling and stop doing all the other kinds of things they were doing because of this powerful model you set up.
Right.
Now, you've got some resentment because you're not being helped, but that's the way it works.
You have to deal with that. So how many of these parents grew up themselves in dysfunctional
environments? I think most of us do, actually.
Right? I mean, really, truly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think the perfect setting is almost a myth, and every time I think I see one, then I find out, things really weren't that cool. Everybody struggles one way or another.
Yeah.
I mean, none of us get life on a silver platter. There's always one part of that plot of this missing that we have to fill in. In our day, we resent having to do it. In the 19th century, we just took it as the way things were. So our expectations of what we are entitled to get as children has changed dramatically in the last 100 years. We think we are entitled to this, this, and this.
Mm-hmm.
And why don't we have it? My parents are so awful.
Mm-hmm.
People weren't saying that in the 19th century.
No, they weren't.
At all.
No.
But that's where we are. And I think it's a function of various kinds of liberation. Women's lib and children's lib, racial lib, that we all have freedoms we didn't have before. And this is how we're currently acting these out. It's not all bad. We, as a culture, we change all the time and we make adjustments, and we'll just see where all this goes.
So then clearly, though, you see that this will be an issue that's not going away, if anything, getting more intense?
Well, I guess it's hard to predict the future.
Mm-hmm.
I try to in my writing, but I don't do a very good job of it because it's really hard to do. Where is this thing going? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Time will tell.
And we'll probably both be gone when any significant change happens. In fact, I tell clients this program in 100 years will probably seem archaic because the culture will have changed significantly.
Mm-hmm.
How it's going to change, I don't know. But we're not there yet, so you're going to do the program.
So you got to stick with this. So tell me what's next in your series.
Next is on a girl age 16 by the name of Sugar,
mm-hmm.
who is anything but.
Cool.
So she is a real piece of work.
So is it still along the same lines of angry, out of control?
Right.
Yeah.
But it's a very different picture she presents.
Why is it different?
She's an adolescent female.
Okay.
10 years old.
Yeah.
Very different from Spike, who's about 10.
Yeah.
And she's very sexual, and of course that just drives her parents nuts.
Yeah.
These kinds of kids are sexual because it's how they get affection and attention.
Yes.
And we don't like it, but we haven't got much to say about it. We can cure it, probably, at least to a large extent, at least stop the promiscuity part by the way that we handle it. But the more that we are oppositional to them, the more we keep telling them what a disappointment they are and get angry at them, the more they're going to flee into whatever behaviors they've gotten in sex with one of them.
They will do it. Isn't that just, it's fascinating. The human psyche is so interesting.
It is.
Yes. So when will that be coming out?
Oh, I suppose around Christmas.
Oh, good. Well, you're writing a lot these days then.
Oh, I am.
That's
a great
fantastic.
Deal. I spend several hours a day writing.
Oh, good, good. And so all of your books, all of your work, all that kind of information can be found through your website?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. And listeners can connect with you through email through there?
Oh, sure. Yep.
Good.
Exactly.
Okay, good. So that's dragibson.com.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, we are just about here out of time. This has been such an interesting interview. Okay, Dr. Gibson, well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Very informative, and all the best to you.
Thanks.
Take care.
Bye.
All right, listeners, that's been Dr. Andrew Gibson, his new book, Got an Angry Kid? Parenting Spike, a Seriously Difficult Child, is out now, out on Loving Healing Press, and really a fantastic book if you are dealing with this issue. And you can find out so much more at Dr. Gibson's website, dragibson.com. Well, I want to thank you so much for tuning in. Come back to Inside Scoop Live. We'll be back next week. I want to thank you. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.